This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Aslin, for the news. My name is Rich Bradbury. This is Enterprise Biz Bites. I'm joined in the studio by
Majida Hashim,
Christine Wong,
Arvind Yuvraj.
Oh, my word, it's a full house. You've all missed me, right? That's why you're all in here together
of course.
Of course.
Definitely.
Yeah, I see those eyebrows, Christine Wong. Right, we have stories for you this afternoon. We've got a story about Lenovo, who weren't paying attention before they sent out 750,000 laptops with spyware on them. Ooh. Those naughty people. Mm. Lenovo, right? You can also print your own 3D printed mask. We've got a story about the Zika virus. Mm-hmm. Facebook, how they are offering hundreds of millions of dollars for music rights. Mm-hmm. A company called iFlow. Where did you go?
We flew.
It's a Swedish startup. They're selling a smart wristband to help care for the elderly. They've raised $5.1 million. More about that in a little while then. So this story about Lenovo, guys. Any of you got a Lenovo laptop? Arvind, no? Yours
no.
Is, no?
Dell?
Okay. No, HP. MacBook.
None in here then. Okay, so if you have a 3-year-old Lenovo laptop at home, it may be secretly collecting what's known as visual data on your web browsing habits and using it for advertising purposes, right?
Oh.
So the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission in the U.S., announced on Tuesday that they'd settled with Lenovo, who are, of course, a Beijing-based electronics company, over 3 violations that show how the agency is continuing to clamp down on companies that invade customer privacy. So, during a teleconference, 750,000 Lenovo laptops sold between August 2014 and June of 2015 came pre-installed with a program called Visual Discovery, which is made by a company in Palo Alto in California. Mm-hmm. It's a piece of software called Superfish. Now, how they describe it is that imagine it's the online equivalent of somebody, without your knowledge, intercepting your mail, opening it, reading it, resealing it, and putting it back in your mailbox. That's the kind of stuff that this software does.
Mm.
Now, the question is, it's very smart because what it can do, it can look for an ad. And let's say you're looking for a chest of drawers. It can look for another set of chest of drawers, and it will automatically place that into your browser as part of the ads that appear on the side.
Mm-hmm.
It's very smart. It's very scary. It stores stuff like your login details, your social security numbers, your bank account information, all of this kind of stuff. So if you look at this, the amount of they are saying that Lenovo will have to pay $3.5 million, roughly, across 32 states in the U.S. The problem with that is the sales of these laptops alone are somewhere between $375 and $1 billion.
Wow.
So, it's chump change to Lenovo. They're technically this was a smart business decision, right?
Mm.
Yeah. But then you have to, where's the line, actually? Like, what's spyware and what's not? Because I'm thinking we have stuff on our PCs now, like apps and stuff that pulls the same kind of data, can tell us. Facebook
does to install some of that stuff, though, right?
We choose to.
You read through the small print, the fine print, and
Which
none of us do.
Yeah.
The difference with these Lenovo laptops is you didn't know you were getting it. It just came with it.
I think the problem with that as well is that a lot of laptops will come pre-installed with several programs and they don't look malicious. We don't know what they do.
Especially if the company who's produced it is supplying
exactly.
It,
even on my MacBook alone, there's a whole utilities folder full of programs. I don't know what they're doing. I don't know if they're running on my computer or whatnot. So it's really difficult. How do you prevent this in future? How do you have to go through every single program that's been pre-installed and tested to figure out if it's malware? How do you regulate this now?
Right.
The thing is, there's already so many apps or programs that are already listening to what our preferences are. Oh, and these are targeted ads. It's online. They are already listening and giving me all kinds of suggestions of things that I might be interested in. This is just another one.
Mm. I mean, what defines spyware? So that's the thing. Like, what? Where does it stop? Like, what's okay and what's not okay? So this program is pulling stuff. I think it keeps your information.
Yeah,
like
it does.
Social security numbers and stuff that. So maybe that's why it's defined as spyware. But it's not so different from the stuff that we get in our notebooks and phones already.
Yeah.
Like, if you get a phone that's not officially from the Samsung, the sellers here, the authorized stores, and you buy it from a third-party seller, then it comes with bloatware sometimes.
Absolutely.
You know, they install stuff for you, especially if you don't want to do it yourself. So how do you know these programs are not pulling the same kind of data?
I mean, I think the case with this is, they've actually you know, stood up and said, hey, you can't do this. You know, and I think part of that is because it's a Chinese company and it's the American FTC who have gone, hey, you know, we've got enough going on with Russia. We don't need you guys getting involved again. You know, I don't know. It's just it's just silly. But it worries me that, because we've had this discussion before, and I know that Jeff and Matt speak a lot about it on Tech Talk. You know, people just don't know what's on their laptops, like you were saying, Christine. You know, and there are people out there who are going to be suffering because of this, because we know that somebody at Lenovo knew this was happening. You know, they'd actually said, okay, yeah, put this software on, because this company, Superfish, they would have paid Lenovo heck knows how much money to get away with this, right? Anyway, that's my little rant out of the day. Let's have something a little bit more interesting, a little bit less kind of ranty. Christine.
But equally disturbing.
But equally disturbing,
Equally disturbing, yes. So I have a story about how you can make your own 3D printed mask that reacts to your emotions.
This thing actually looks disgusting.
It looks horrifying. So we got this from TechCrunch, and if you guys look up the picture, it's just what it looks like is just like a giant plastic white, red, and blue blobby thing on your face.
It looks like some enormous insect has laid eggs on your face.
Right. That is what it looks like. But I mean, the technology behind it is just really interesting, and I just wanted to talk about that. It's actually based on a master's thesis project made by Siru Peng, Adi Mir, and Sylvia Ruda, and it uses Harvard's Soft Robotics Toolkit, and it's made out of soft electronics and colored liquid. And what it does is the mask is mapped to the wearer's face, and then it uses a muscle sensor to assess the patterns your face makes when you smile, frown, or act concerned. And once the mask senses these emotions, it injects or sucks out liquids through the capillaries, so it mimics what you're feeling, but in a very abstract way on your face, on a piece of silicone on your
face. So essentially, you've got zits on your face that grow in reaction to your emotions.
Yes, so basically
that's
it's
like
just...
every teenager though, right?
Pretty much, yeah.
Like a teenage art project.
It's Rorschach's mask from Watchmen, just less cool.
Right.
But what I love about it is that, first of all, the article itself has a link to tell you to learn how to make your own. So there's a whole...
There's a seven-step
process. So it's like you 3D scan your face, design the shape of your mask, design your inflation pattern, print your molds, cast silicon, program it to respond to your facial expressions, and then wear it.
None of this sounds like something you can do on your own. None of it.
If you have any programming skills and want to put blobs on your face or something, there are actually instructions on the TechCrunch article as well. But my question is also, why? Because you would think that your face can tell other people what you're feeling already, so why do you need a mask that goes over your face that reacts to how you're feeling but also doesn't project that in a way that is understandable?
Like Rorschach, like you said.
To the general public.
You know, and he's annoyed, but you're like, I think he's annoyed, but I'm not sure.
I don't know.
He looks a little bit angry.
Maybe he's just scared. Maybe he's nervous. We don't know. But so the technology is really cool, because I love the fact that you can, like, 3D printing and mapping faces and stuff has gone crazy. Like, the technology has evolved so much. We've seen things like people can completely... perfectly recreate, you know, the faces of famous people or politicians, and then also their voices, and make fake videos that look completely realistic. And this is another thing where it's like, I wonder how long it's going to take for, you know, technology to take this whole assessing people's emotions thing and run with it, you know, for like advertising purposes or whatever. Because now that there is a way, even though you have to have the thing on your face for the muscle center to work, et cetera, but now that there is a way to, you know, to capture people's emotions like that, I'm just kind of wondering what's the commercial.
But taking it one step further, you know, the idea of having this thing and not just having it react to your emotions, there's like Mission Impossible kind of stuff happening.
Yeah.
You know, you're pushing a button and it changing to whatever face you want. That's some scary stuff.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Especially because you can program it to do whatever you want, essentially, in terms of movement on your face. So you could...
I'm sure right now, because it's blobs on your face reacting to how you feel, in the future it will be more refined to change. I'm not blobs anymore, obviously.
Hopefully.
Look at it now it could be like just a proof of concept, or even just an art project. But we've spoke about before about how shops can tell the mood of a person and recommend them ice cream or recommend them chocolate or something like that. Now we won't have those sensors anymore. It will just be blobs on your face that will say that you're not in a good mood. You need ice cream.
It'll be interesting if they turn this into like a helmet sort of thing where you can like wear it. And especially for people who are seeking like treatment, if they're like a psychiatrist, you know, sometimes people don't want to see what they're actually feeling.
Depressed.
Yeah.
That kind of thing, yeah.
Yeah, no, but if they're trying to hide their emotions, if you send someone for counselling, they want to mask, you know, and they want to tell you exactly what they're feeling, at least the, you know, the person who's in charge, like the doctors, they'll be able to find out for sure if they're wearing this helmet. It's I don't know if it's intrusive of privacy, but at least it can honestly tell you what the person's going
through. That's a good point.
I think it would also be interesting to try this mask on people who may not have the same way of expressing their emotions. People who maybe suffer from like kind of a neuroatypical kind of conditions, because then their reaction is not going to be the same reaction on the mask as it is for other people, and it would be interesting in that sense. But
Yeah, interesting stuff. Right, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll be talking about the Zika virus. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, some music coming up. It is the Ramones with Blitzkrieg Bop. Do not go anywhere. You are listening to BizBytes here on BFM 89.9.
Busy following Money Trail. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise BizBytes. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm in the studio with
Arvind Yuvaraj,
Christine Wong,
and Majida Hashim.
Okay, so we spoke about Lenovo and their 750,000 laptops that came pre-shipped with spyware. We then talked about having zits on your face or Christine's 3D printed mask that reacts to your emotions from one virus to another. Speaking about Zika virus now, but in a slightly different way.
Yeah, so before we get into what they've this group of US scientists are using the Zika virus for, the Zika virus, for those who don't know, it's a virus that people can catch when they are bitten by an infected mosquito. There was a scare not too long ago. It was infecting a lot of babies in
Brazil, I believe.
Brazil, yes. So infected infants have been born with this abnormally small heads, and then they have underdeveloped brains, which is a condition known as microcephaly. So what scientists have done is they've started to use the Zika virus to cure or to treat brain cancer adults. So they've found that it's super interesting because they say that when infants are infected, they have a lot of stem cells in their brains.
Because they're still developing.
Still developing. And when the Zika infects it, it gets to the stem cells and then it gets to healthy parts of the brain as well.
Right.
So they are born abnormally. But when you get to, when you grow up and when you're an adult, you have less stem cells. And when you have, let's say, something like a brain tumor or brain cancer, the Zika virus sort of attacks the cancer instead.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So it focuses on the cancer and the tumor, and it doesn't focus on the healthy parts of the brain. So it's able to zone in and then shrink the tumors that are in the brain.
Is this after they've adapted the virus, or it just does that kind of naturally?
It just does it naturally.
That's so weird.
The only thing is they need to fix the Zika first. They need to modify it in a way so that it doesn't become, like, it doesn't do what it's supposed to do as the virus itself. Mm. It's supposed to just focus on the tumors and not cause any other harm to the patient. But, you know, human trials are, like, they say it's, like, far off. What they've done is they actually tried it on mice. So Zika injections shrank aggressive tumors in fully grown mice and left other brain cells completely undamaged. So those are the trials that are going on now. They even tried it on human brain tissue that they got from donated brains, and it had the same effect.
So it works.
It works. The trials work. So now a bunch of people, like in different universities and medical colleges and stuff, are using the same technique, and they're testing it out on other subjects. We don't know when human trials will start exactly. They say it's still far off. They'll need to do a bunch of tests first to get there. But it's a good sign. I mean, they're saying that it's a silver lining that they're using one disease or something that was bad, considered completely bad, to treat something else that's bad and probably turn it into a positive.
I mean, we know that the infection has been linked to severe birth defects in almost 30 countries, no longer considered an international medical emergency as it was a couple of years ago. But yeah, like you say, possibly a step in the right direction.
It is.
Yeah.
Because they say that with brain cancer, the thing is that it spreads through the brain, so it makes it difficult to see where the tumor ends and where the healthy tissue begins, because you can't tell. Sometimes it's very difficult difficult to detect what's what. So when you go in, if it's an invasive surgery or even if it's chemo or any kind of other procedure, it damages everything in the process. So people are like hurt. But the Zika only seems to focus on the tumor, on the stuff that you want to get rid of.
There seems to be a lot of kind of development in treatment of cells like this recently. I mean, I think I was reading just a couple of days ago about these very small, like tiny little lasers that were being used to like break certain cells apart. Did you read about that recently?
No, I mean, lasers have been used to break stuff apart for some time. They've been used right now widely in kidney stones already anyway, and laser is for laser eye treatments, been used for a really long time. But the problem with this Zika thing is that after the Zika has attacked the cancer that it needs to in the brain, then what? Because it still needs to go somewhere, and right now there is no treatment for Zika itself. The big question will be for, especially for women who want to get pregnant, they've already been discouraged from going to countries in case they get pregnant because of Zika virus. So now if they have to choose between, if they have a brain cancer, if they have to choose between getting Zika to treat brain cancer versus possibly not being able to bear children, then...
But then I'd imagine that radiotherapy or chemotherapy would have similar detrimental effects on the woman's body, right?
That is true. But then you have targeted radiotherapy or chemotherapy treatment, and it's far more research than Zika itself that we know has no treatment right now. So there's some concerns over there.
No, it's funny that you should say that, because there's this team at the Washington University School of Medicine and also the University of California, San Diego, and they have already started to modify the virus to make it more tame. So what they're going to do is they're going to use the Zika's way of targeting certain cells but not have the effect of the Zika virus itself. So they say once they've added a few more changes, it's going to be impossible for the virus to cause its own disease. And if they can do that, if they manage to modify the Zika virus, then they hope to start human trials in about 18 months. That's so one and a half years.
So then it would just be like an additional kind of thing inside your body just floating around.
Yeah, which has no effect, which is not, it won't be able to grow into a full-blown Zika threat in your own body, but it'll be able to do what it does naturally. As a virus. Yeah,
you're then probably left with that option then, aren't you? Mm-hmm, I don't know.
I'm just really hoping that this will work, because if you think about it, you know, when vaccines were first introduced as a thing, people were like, but how can you cure the thing by putting more of the thing into your body? But it, you know, in theory, it might sound like dangerous, but in practice it works. So if this is something that can help, especially with the, you know, with the problem of not being able to identify which is the healthy and which is the unhealthy tissue, I think this is, I mean, if this works, this is completely revolutionary.
It's also the same that if you get a snake bite, you put anti-venom with it, which is more snake bite as well. So but it's a modified anti-venom, so it cancels out.
Interesting stuff, though.
Yeah. I mean, there have been like so many papers like written in the past about how cancer itself might be part of human evolution.
Right.
There have been a lot of belief. Like, I think there was one in 2014, like it got like really famous online. Someone is saying that the cell itself is doing it as a defense mechanism. That's why it blocks out everything. So the way to treat it was by inducing like more oxygen into the body. It was like super technical and difficult to understand. But the moral of the story was that the disease itself is a part of our basic evolution and will change over time. So it's interesting to see how you can use like other diseases to fight other diseases instead of it being like all bad in the process.
To find out more, I'm sure the bigger picture at some point we'll be picking up on the story as well.
Yeah, I was going
to
say.
Right, okay, we need to take a short break and have some more music. Thank you for tweeting in about how not many radio stations play the Ramones nowadays. Of course, we did just play the Ramones. How about a little bit of Rolling Stones? We'll give you some of that as well. And then maybe a bit of Queen. Let's do some of that.
Let's do that.
Okay, so let's take a very short break. This is Enterprise Biz Bytes here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Breakfast for Masters, BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes, folks. My name is Rich Bradbury with
Arvind Yuvaraj,
Christine Wong,
and Majida Hashim.
We are with you for another half an hour or so. We've got a couple more stories that we want to throw out. So we've had Lenovo and 750,000 laptops, blah, blah, blah. The 3D printed mask that reacts to your emotions, a Zika virus used to treat aggressive brain cancer, still in development. Early story, but sounds quite interesting. Now, a story from our good friends over at Facebook. They are attempting to attract billions of dollars in additional advertising revenue and challenge YouTube as the largest site for advertising supported video on the web. I'll just throw that out there and wait for the quick inhales.
Yep.
There we go.
Inhale
yep.
happen.
So they're offering major record labels and music publishers hundreds of millions of dollars so the users, that's you and me, everybody, of the network can legally include songs in videos that they upload according to people familiar with the matter. Basically, they're saying, we know this is happening, but we can't really tell you about it. So what that means is, to simplify things, we can create content now and put some of our favorite songs on. And Facebook will actually pay the rights for us to be able to do that.
Oh.
Doesn't this seem like... I'm like, huh. Why would they be so nice in doing this for us, right? Why?
Because I think they're going to use the YouTube model and have their own creators and stuff. And
you are so smart. I'm right? So smart.
You know, there's something called advertisers.
That's right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So anyway, as we know, the posting and viewing of video on Facebook has exploded in recent years. Many of the videos featured music to which Facebook doesn't have the rights. And under current law, rights holders must ask Facebook to take down the videos with their infringing material. So they are the music owners have been negotiating with Facebook for months in search of a solution. Facebook has promised to build a system to identify and tag music that infringes copyrights, or they could just buy Shazam. Yet such a setup will take as long as 2 years to complete. Again, buy Shazam. So they're eager to make a deal, and now that so it no longer frustrates users, because you know people create their own content, they upload it, then they wonder why it's been taken down. And of course, it's because you're infringing on copyright, and Facebook has to take the blame for that. The interesting thing about this, the people that they've the woman, in fact, that they've employed is a woman called Tamara Hrivnak. She's a former YouTube executive. She's also a former executive at Warner Chappell Music Publishing. And apparently, she's quite well-liked amongst her peers, right? So she's one of those, you scratch my back, I'll scratch your back, help you out kind of a little
bit. She used to work at the music label.
Correct.
And then she used to work at YouTube.
Correct.
And now she's with Facebook.
Correct. Ah. Yeah.
Okay. So he has friends in
all the right places.
Everywhere.
Right. And as we know, there's a lot of stuff on YouTube now that is obviously infringing on copyright. And a lot of the record companies are coming down quite heavy on YouTube, particularly a lot of the users, you know, you shouldn't be doing this. And Facebook are trying to take that stance of us versus them at the minute. You know, we're the good guys, YouTube's the bad guys.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, you know, YouTube, one of the big challenges of using YouTube, I've seen from a lot of people who, especially actually watching a lot of YouTubers who want to use, you know, music or something in their videos, and they have to find loopholes or especially, you know, channels that have to do with media content.
Yeah.
So things like the Nerdist channel, which talks about, you know, like Game of Thrones and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and all these, on all this media stuff that they then can't post in their actual video because the infringement will crack down on them. But then there's other things like there are lyric videos, songs on YouTube that have never been taken down.
Well, they've been there for years.
And they've been there since the inception of YouTube itself.
Yeah.
You know, using Windows Movie Maker to write lyrics. And those haven't been taken down. So the copyright infringement stuff on YouTube has been a very bizarre obstacle for a lot of YouTube's users. So if Facebook can then just be like, hey, this is not a problem for us at all anymore. You can just post whatever you want. Then I feel like so many people are going to immediately abandon YouTube because it's so much work to have to work around the copyright infringement stuff that they have going on.
I think that's part of Facebook's deal, right? I mean, they want to bring a lot of the kind of content creators over to Facebook, and we've seen a lot of new deals being struck, in fact, with, you know, new content creators who are moving from YouTube to Facebook because they're getting an awful lot of support. You know, and like you say, the good thing about this, if you look at it on behalf of the record company, is that record companies now, in the music industry in particular, actually over the last few years, last couple of years, have seen really good growth in terms of sales. And for a while it dipped down when Spotify was getting established and Apple Music was getting established. Now, though, it's on the way up. Somebody like Facebook coming in and saying, hey, we're going to slap a whole bunch of money your way. Let us use your music.
Yeah. Why not?
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, have you seen those videos where, like, they use a song on YouTube and then the top comments, like, what song is this?
Right.
Yeah.
You know? So everyone's... There are a lot of people who are interested in the music that you use, so why can't Facebook be, like, a platform for those guys to use their music in other people's videos, like famous creators or internet celebrity videos or whatever, and then you get to know their music through them?
I think my only kind of concern with this, though, is that, you know, when if content creators do shift from YouTube to Facebook, how does it protect, like, original content? Because there are content creators that complain a lot about their content being stolen or reposted, and then that goes viral. So, like, you know, where's the line?
And a lot of it gets reposted to Where, of course?
Facebook.
Facebook.
So, so my question is, where's the line? How are they going to, how are they going to moderate, you know, what they allow to, what they pay for, what they don't?
Mm.
You know what I mean? Because that's a very, very big problem with the internet where, you know, even things like tweets will get reposted and then they'll get reposted on specific Twitter accounts that get thousands and thousands and thousands of likes and retweets, and the original tweet lays in on the original thing somewhere.
Well, let's just jump into Mark Zuckerberg's head for just a moment.
That's
and we could, you know, he would be a smart man if he said, "I tell you what, you want to be a content creator on Facebook for us? You pay a small fee per year.
Mm-hmm.
We will then cover all the rights for all of your music, and we'll make sure that your video is not disseminated in places that you don't want it to be." He's got the power to do that. He's got the money to do that, and the ability to do that, perhaps, Christine. What do you think?
And the users.
And the users, yeah.
Yeah.
And it will be a self-reporting thing. You know, it will be people will be like, "Hey, your video shouldn't be over there. It's over on YouTube right now, when really it should be here on Facebook."
I mean, obviously, you can't solve every single problem with, you know, reposting and resharing things on the internet. But if that does happen, and if he's smart enough to make sure that that happens, it's going to completely, YouTube will be dead.
Yep.
It will actually be dead. I mean, the thing is with content creators is that as long as they have a platform that will work for them, they will use that platform. When Vine died, all Viners went to YouTube.
Mm.
And I feel like, you know, this is, it's, if basically if the platform doesn't give anything to them anymore that they don't need, then they're just going to jump ship immediately.
On the flip side, though, we have been talking to people who are a bit younger than I, and they are abandoning Facebook as well, aren't they?
Mm.
You know, they're moving to other platforms, more like to Snapchat and one thing or another,
but
which obviously
like,
doesn't give you the same ability that YouTube or Facebook does, but I don't know.
Or what if Facebook opens their own YouTube, like their own video section? Because
it's funny you say that. They're doing something called Watch.
Darn it.
Oh.
They missed the opportunity to name it BlueTube, you guys. Come on.
BlueTube. That sounds kind of
rude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In a way. Depending on which country you're in.
Social media networks are blue. I don't know. I don't see
that. I'm so innocent. I have no idea what you're talking about.
I know, but I actually genuinely don't see the issue with that.
Folks, if you want to get in touch with the show, of course, before we wrap up, we've got one more story coming up after the break. You can get in touch with us via Twitter. We're at BFM Radio, or via WhatsApp on 018-789-8899. Time for another short break. What have we got next? Oh, yes, a bit of Block Party. This Modern Love here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Begin forwarded message. BFM 89.9.
Almost time for us to wrap up here on BFM Enterprise on BizBytes. We've got one more story for you. This one's coming from Majida, who's been a little bit quiet today.
Yeah.
Majida, what's going on?
I spoke in the beginning.
You did. You're all saving all your energy for tomorrow's event, right?
For tomorrow's event, which is our breakaway. And if you don't have a ticket yet, you should go and get them
very
right
quickly.
Now.
Yes, yeah. It's the seventh edition tomorrow.
Yeah, seventh annual one.
My word. I've been around that whole time, you know.
Oh,
right from day one.
Oh.
Anyway, enough about me. Come on, Majida, tell me about this story. iFlu, right?
Yeah.
What is this?
So iFlu is a Swedish startup, and it combines hardware, sensors, and AI, and it offers a smart wristband to help care for the elderly. They just raised 5.1 million euros in new funding. This would be their Series A round. It is described as an e-health system designed to improve the quality of life for the elderly and provide peace of mind for relatives and caregivers. It marries a vast amount of data and to help the elderly remain as independent as possible for as long as possible.
So, I'd imagine it does stuff like it monitors the heart rate, blood pressure, blood sugar levels.
That would be a normal wristband that's already out.
Does more?
Yeah, this is a wristband that is tailored specifically for the elderly itself. It monitors eating patterns to make sure that they're eating regularly at it captures a trend of eating itself, activity level and mobility. So if they're going out on walks or if they're extra vigorous or if there's a low amount of activity itself, it shows that trend as well. It monitors their sleep cycles and sleep disorders. It also has a button to press in case of emergencies, and if there's suddenly a drop in activity altogether, it alerts the people on the other side, which are the caregivers. You will have a program installed, and it will tell you that person suddenly has zero activity, and that's pretty interesting, especially if you know somebody who's elderly who's living on their own,
right?
And they can't inform anyone or they can't get quickly enough to tell someone that something's happening to them.
Right. This is one of those absolute peace of mind devices that, mm-hmm. that I think anybody who's got an elderly mm-hmm. relative living alone would certainly want to get behind, right?
Yep.
I mean, I know for a fact my grandmother years ago, she lived in a self-contained bungalow mm-hmm. in a safe area, you know, at the end of the street. There were nurses on call and whatever. But whenever she had a problem, she had to get to a specific place within her house to pull an alarm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's difficult. Mm. And now having just a little button on your wrist.
No, it isn't even a button. It will detect that you have suddenly dropped in activity. And
even
so you just, if a certain, God forbid, it's just collapsed somewhere in the house, it will already alert somebody that suddenly there is no activity by this person itself.
Is it available yet?
I see that according to the website, that the app itself will be available for download soon. The program, if I'm not mistaken, already is applicable to, let me see, I'm going to scroll down here. There is an early customer, which is a leading healthcare company in Scandinavia.
Oh, Alaris.
Yeah. And they are already rolling it out, and they say that the next step will be marketing it to in-home care companies,
right.
So that they can monitor the people that they are under their service.
And I think the elderly will be, you know, because they don't want to be wearing things around their neck.
Yeah,
no. I've seen those alarms that, you know, some old people can wear. They want something that's, you know,
like a watch.
Like a watch, yeah.
And the design of this, because I went to a website, is so discreet. It's as sleek and discreet as possible. And you don't even have to worry about the battery, because when it's time to change the battery, it will alert you that it's time to change the battery, and it sends you a new one in the post.
Oh, wow.
Oh.
So you will say the battery is low on this one, another one's on its way. So you don't change it at all.
So, like, the most important part, what's the price tag?
That's very clever. There's no price tag yet on this website.
But so, okay, so to kind of sum up, it does all of these wonderful things that we want it to do.
Mm.
It then uploads that data up to the cloud somewhere where somebody is monitoring it. I assume software monitoring first through to an actual person.
Yeah, it interprets this trend over to whoever that you would designate as the caregiver who's monitoring these trends.
Mm. Right. Mm-hmm. Wow. Big steps.
Yeah. You can wear it in the shower. You can sweat over it. You never ever have to take it off.
Actually, what I love about this is that a lot of the wearable tech that we've been talking about on BizBytes as well, it's mostly for people, you know, who are relatively able-bodied and want to just monitor a lot of their stats, for lack of a better word.
Gym, yeah.
You know, or it focuses on one specific issue. And this is really interesting because it's actually thinking about, well, who actually could benefit the most from not having to, you know, from just wearing a small piece of technology and surveillance and stuff like that. Mm. So I like that. I think it's a really good application of wearable technology.
I really like it. Okay, it's time for us to wrap up for the day. Let's quickly run through the stories that we had today. We started off with how Lenovo weren't paying attention and they sent out 750,000 laptops with spyware pre-installed.
We talked about a 3D printed mask that reacts to your emotions.
We also spoke about how scientists are using the Zika virus to treat brain cancer.
Then how Facebook are offering hundreds of millions of dollars for music rights.
And a smart wristband to help the elderly live more independently.
That's pretty much it for today. For some of you, we may see you tomorrow, of course, over at Nexus Convention Centre at Bangsar South.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we also have coming up next, G. Silva, the Managing Director of GT International Berhad. So Japan Tobacco International, or JTI, announced the impending closure of its manufacturing plant in the country this year. So the Breakfast Grill spoke to Managing Director G. Silva on the reasons behind the decision, and the company's broader prospects in the region and its plans moving forward.
That's it. On behalf of myself, Arvind Yuvaraj, Christine Wong and Majid Hashim, we will be back tomorrow. But, you know, in two different places at the same time.
Ooh.
So we'll see. It's going to be magic. Anyway, folks, it has been Enterprise Biz Bytes here on BFM 89.9. To play us out, a little bit of Jimi Hendrix, She's So Fine. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.